Hello, folks, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. Host today, Marty Jones, and I'm joined by Owen Woods. We want to thank Don Richmond for the music that you're hearing and Daniel Boyce for the bird songs that you're going to hear. On today's episode, Owen and I are going to be talking about our upcoming series on bicycling in the San Luis Valley. We're excited to share our plans and hopes for this project while engaging you, our audience. This project started after we had the idea of using the Outdoor Citizen podcast platform to dig into topics that require more than just a 30-minute interview. With a landscape of audio experiences and narrative storytelling through podcasts, we knew that there was a wide range of topics to discuss. During the winter, we dedicated 4 episodes to look at Colorado snowpack and what experts are seeing. This time, as spring quickly approaches, we wanted to talk less to experts and more to just regular folks, specifically people who ride their bicycles. During this 3 or 4-part series, we will talk to people who ride their bikes for leisure and recreation, exercise and fitness, and people who ride a bike as their only mode of transportation, people who rely on 2 wheels to get them where they need to go. Part of that discussion will center around how cyclists perceive the bike landscape in Alamosa and the greater San Luis Valley. Alamosa is a bike-friendly place, but there's a lot of work to be done to expand access to the micro-mobility infrastructure. The first part of our in-depth look at bikes will not be asking, but stating that there are a lot of cyclists in Alamosa and the San Luis Valley. So let's get into it. Are you all set, Owen?
Sure am.
Well, how would you describe how cycling fits into your life?
You know, I've been riding bikes since I was as small as I can remember. My mom actually was she rode a lot. She was a racer, but she never really competed. She just had good friends who were really competitive. So I kind of grew up with that mentality that biking is, you know, it's fun, but it's also a great way of transportation. But lately, if it's the summertime, if there's no real crazy wind or weather, I'm riding my bike. You know, I see not a lot of excuses to drive my truck around the town, and I use my bike as probably my main transportation during the nicer months.
Yeah, and I think I can say the same thing. I can remember, well, the first bike I can remember riding was when I was maybe in 3rd, 4th, 5th grade, something like that. A big old clunky balloon tire bike. Nice. With Longhorn handlebars. Mm-hmm. And it was a means of getting to and from school. Yep. It was a means of riding to meet friends, going out and, mm-hmm. and doing stuff during all the time. I grew up in eastern Kansas. So winters were kind of tough for bicycling, but during the spring and summer and fall, we were on our bikes all the time.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I grew up in East Alamosa, and, you know, that's a pretty secluded little neighborhood, but we had access to the river, so my friends and I, if we weren't walking, we were riding our bikes, raising hell all over the place.
Yeah, well,
you know,
there's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
You know, and I, all through college, I didn't really ride bikes in high school except around the house where we lived, because we generally lived out in the country. But once I went to undergraduate school, I rode my bike from where our apartment was to the campus. And when Diana and I moved to Albuquerque to go to graduate school, that's how we got to school from however far away we lived. I think the farthest we ever lived from the campus was about 3 or 4 miles.
Nice.
But that's how we got to school, was on our bicycles. And I have never lived in all my professional career, I have never lived so far away that I had to commute from home to work in a vehicle, always on a bicycle or on foot. That's been really nice. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really start doing, I'm not a competitive cyclist.
Yeah, neither am I.
But a recreational cyclist, and I do cycle for fitness too. Mm-hmm. It's just a fun thing to do.
It is fun, and I think it's, you know, I skateboarded a lot when I was a kid, so my knees are a little creaky even in my late 20s. But I find biking to be just as enjoyable as running, because I love running, but I don't have that same soreness, that same impact as riding a bike. And also, I like catching a good tailwind.
Oh, and I like catching a good downhill,
oh, yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah.
There's something about going fast on a bike that is appealing to me.
It's so appealing. I go mountain biking with my friends up in the mountains, and I slog through the uphills just to enjoy those little downhills. You know, I'll torture myself just for a good downhill.
Yep, but you know, that's the really good thing about riding in the mountains, mm-hmm. Whether it's on a paved trail or a paved highway or a single track. You work hard for the uphill,
yep.
So that you can enjoy the downhill.
Yeah. Yep.
And unlike the wind, you know that when you're riding uphill, there's always going to be a reward,
oh, yeah,
at the end. Sometimes in the valley, the wind is not as predictable,
no,
as you would like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that you've had this experience before of planning your ride so that you would be going into a headwind at the start when you're fresh.
Yep.
And then when you turn around, you're planning to have a nice tailwind.
Yep.
Sometimes those plans don't always work out, and you end up with a headwind both ways.
Both ways. Well, when I worked at Christie's, I rode my bike, you know, it's a 2.5 mile ride from my house every day, but I would ride on craft. And during March and April, that was a headwind coming to work and a headwind leaving work. And I swear I'd be in my smallest gear as fast as I could, just kind of stuck on craft for about a mile.
Well, that's just the way it is.
It is. It's good training.
Yeah. So one reason that I'm pretty excited about this series of podcasts that we're doing is that I think it's important for a number of people to be able to use bicycles as their primary mode of transportation, especially now with the advent and availability of e-bikes, including e-cargo bikes,
yeah,
where you can haul quite a bit of stuff if you want. But, you know, short trips to the grocery store or to the hardware store or something, if you carry a backpack with you, you don't have to have a cargo bike.
Sure.
You can still get quite a bit of stuff,
mm-hmm,
and it's not only good for our bodies, but it's good for the planet
as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love just, like, oh, I need to go get breakfast. Why get in the truck and go get breakfast? I can just get on the bike and go to the store and get a little exercise and go home and have a better meal, you know, feel,
yeah,
a little bit better.
Or you can ride your bike to Campus Cafe,
exactly,
and have breakfast there.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good deal.
Yeah, I think Alamosa is a very walkable town, but it's even more of a biking town. I mean, it's just, there's 10 minutes in any direction. You're pretty much where you need to go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this project of talking about bicycling is something that we really want to, we hope to accomplish the ideas, or get in mind, in everybody's mind, the idea of what it means to ride a bicycle, mm, in Alamosa in the San Luis Valley. How can it be done safely? What are some suggestions? What are the rules of the road? And what to look out for if you are a driver.
Right.
How to make sure that you are safe for pedestrians and for cyclists, mm-hmm, as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to hone in on is vehicle and cyclist interactions and how those play out, how they're enforced, if they're not enforced, because that's one of the things I'm interested in, is are bicyclists getting cited by the police? Are drivers getting cited by the police? It's one of those things I'm trying to find out is my perception of some traffic that I've had, is that widespread or is it localized?
Right.
You know?
And we know that, you know, for the most part, in my experience, for the most part, drivers in the Alamosa and the San Luis Valley, and indeed throughout Colorado, mm, are pretty considerate,
yeah,
of bicyclists. That's not always the case, but, mm-hmm, I would say 90% of the time, 90% of my experience,
yeah,
has been favorable. But what I get more irritated at, quite honestly, is cyclists who are not following the rules,
yeah,
of the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're riding on the incorrect side of the road,
mm-hmm,
and it makes it hard for drivers because they're not anticipating cyclists being on the wrong side, so they don't look necessarily for cyclists on the incorrect side of the road. Mm-hmm. That means the interactions can be really unfavorable. And it translates into unhappy motorists, unhappy cyclists. Yep. And it's just not good for any of us.
I agree. I think that we are fortunate enough, though, to have a lot of areas that you can almost totally eliminate your motor vehicle interactions. You know, there's a lot of places that you can just spit right onto a trail and never even cross a road. I think that's an advantage, but there are places where you have to cross a lot of intersections to get to those places, and that's where things can get a little tricky, I think.
Yeah, when I ride my bicycle down here to do the podcast, mm-hmm. for example, I can be on the levee trails for right. ways, at least until I get to state. But then once I need to be here, because the podcast studio is on State Avenue, mm-hmm. I'm going to be crossing some intersections, and I have to pay attention. And mm-hmm. that's important for us to remember that not only is there distracted driving, but there's distracted bicycle riding as well. Mm-hmm. So we have some responsibilities as cyclists to ensure that we are not endangering motorists as well, and pedestrians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't know about you, but I can get real zippy on a bike, and I can catch people off guard, which is I try not to do. But you come around a corner, and you're in a blind spot for a person or a vehicle, and so it's easy to get into that meditative flow of a bicycle and totally lose track of everything else on the road. I kind of have to constantly remind myself, like, no, just slow down. It's not a contest, not a race.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, you could be in a race if you want, but it's not necessary. So, Owen, talk a little bit about the survey that we're going to try to do.
Yeah, I'm excited for the survey because we're going to be doing a little bit of data, more data than I think we need to do. But I like, because I think the reason we're trying to extrapolate so much data from the people around us is because there's very little data to begin with. And I think the survey will be a good stepping stone in understanding not only, A, how many people ride their bikes, how often they ride their bikes, but how they perceive cycling in the Alamosa area, the San Luis Valley, because I think that's really important, because we know there's a lot of people riding their bikes, but how do they feel? Do they feel safe? Do they feel scared? What time of the day do they ride? They like to ride? So I think this survey will give us a really broad range of data that can kind of help us better understand what the actual environment of cycling is in the valley, particularly with how individuals perceive what it's like for them.
And we hope to engage you, our listeners, mm-hmm. and also readers of the Alamosa right. Citizen as well, in the survey. And do you have a sense of when we're going to start this, Owen?
Fairly soon. I think by April we should have it ready and out. I'm thinking that's kind of the plan, is by the first week of April it should be in the hands of the public and on the website, and Grantley Showalter at ABC will have it, and we'll kind of put it around town as far and wide as we can.
And for those of you who don't know the ABC, that's the Alamosa Bicycle Coalition. Mm-hmm. And they've started collecting some data as well.
Right.
And we're going to be building off that survey. So we want to be sure to acknowledge their impact on this as well.
And I know SLV Go, San Luis Valley Great Outdoors, they'll also be kind of using their channels to put it out. Maddie Alborn at the Church Project, she'll be kind of tapping into Monta Vista with that survey. So I think we'll have a quite a far reach on this one. And there'll be a lot of different ways to interact with the survey online. I'm not sure if we'll have an in-person, but it'll mainly be online, but there'll be a lot of different ways to access it. So
yeah, so watch out for that. Mm-hmm. We'll be sure on upcoming podcasts to give you a link to the online version. And again, make sure you look at the AlamosaCitizen.com, and that will have links as well.
Yes.
And we intend to, we hope to be able to represent a number of different bicycling members of our community.
As many as we can.
So as we said at the outset, folks who are riding for leisure, recreation, exercise, fitness, and folks who rely on a bicycle mm-hmm. as their only means of transport. So please make sure you pay attention and participate in the survey. We'll be right back after a brief message from our sponsor. You're listening to The Outdoor Citizen.
Do you have an idea that could make life in Bonavista even better? Maybe it's new chemistry equipment that will inspire high school students, or medical kits that will help police officers respond to emergencies, or maybe it's transforming a former church into a new community art space. Every day, Bonavista locals are making their community better with a little support from the Lore Foundation. To share an idea and learn how Lore can help, contact Yvette Atencio at ivette@lorefoundation.org.
Gotta love those crane sounds. And they're still here in the valley. I've seen them on my last bike rides, so... Welcome back to The Outdoor Citizen. We have some upcoming outdoor events to tell you about. SLV Go is hosting their Nature RX Walk and Runs every Thursday night at 5:15 p.m. When the days get longer, the time will move to 5:30 p.m. These outings are a great way to get out with people and to enjoy a dose of nature therapy. The State of the Basin Symposium is set for March 30th. This year's theme and topic discussion will be on the perspectives on historical challenges. Registration opens at 8 a.m. in Richardson Hall on the Adams State University campus. On top of the current state of the basin, there will be a presentation on acequias and the latest developments in the renewable water resources front. Colorado Trout Unlimited is hosting their annual River Conservation and Fly Fishing Camp for teen youth at AEI Base Camp in Taylor Park, Colorado, from June 9th through 15th, 2024. The deadline to submit an application, which requires a 2-4 paragraph essay, is April 1. San Luis Valley Trout Unlimited chapter is sponsoring a scholarship to this annual camp. Youth aged 14 through 18 are eligible to apply for the camp. For more information, send an email to SLVTU Education Coordinator Kevin Milder at slvtroutunlimited@gmail.com, and Kevin will provide more information and a link to apply for the camp. Mountain Film on Tour is back in Monte Vista's Valley 3 Theater on April 11th. This is the third year that Mountain Film on Tour has been in Monte Vista. San Luis Valley Great Outdoors is sponsoring the event that will have a series of awe-inspiring documentary films from around the world and right here in Colorado. A social event will take place at 4:30 that night at the Pivot Public House in Monte Vista. There will be drinks and prizes. The doors open to the Valley 3 Theater at 6 p.m. The films start at 6:30 p.m. Tickets are $15 per adult and $10 if you're a student. You can purchase tickets at the door or by searching Mountain Film on Tour Monte Vista on eventbrite.com. And Owen, I know you've been to those films before. Mm-hmm. I've been to them a couple of times. They're really good.
They're fun.
They're a good set of films, mm-hmm. and great people there.
Oh, yeah.
So by all means, if you have a chance, get out to Monte Vista on April 11th for the Mountain Film on Tour. Remember, the Valley Calendar is the most comprehensive listing of events from across the San Luis Valley. Be sure you check it out and submit your own events. Stay up to date at alamosacitizen.com. Now we have the latest on snow and weather conditions. Well, I'm really happy to see that after a couple of snowy weekends, the NRCS, National Resource Conservation Service, which monitors the snowpack around the state, has put the Rio Grande Basin at 101% of median. It's not the best snow we've ever had historically, but it's a darn good place to be with just 15 days left before peak runoff begins. The statewide snowpack is at 109% of median. For most of the valley this week, it's going to be bright, sunny skies with temperatures in the 50s, and it's spring starting on... Well, the first full day of spring is Wednesday the 20th. And with spring, we always get a little bit of that word that begins with a W. And what is that word, Owen?
I think you're talking about wind.
Oh, that's the one. It's that four-letter word that you can say on the radio.
You can say it on the radio. Yeah. It's not one of George Carlin's words.
No, that's not one of George.
It should be, but it's not.
There are times when we don't want it to be, that's for sure. So here are some conditions from our local ski areas. Wolf Creek got walloped. 38 inches of snow over the past week, putting their summit depth at 96 inches. And there's a slight chance of snow for the rest of the week. Monarch Mountain also got hit hard with snow. They added 27 inches to their base depth over the weekend, putting them at a comfortable 72-inch base. There's a slight chance of some snow showers this week. Meanwhile, Taos Ski Valley didn't get the snow that Mother Nature was serving here in Colorado, but they did get an additional 10 inches to their base over the past week, and so there's some extra snow to ski all day on. Here's the latest avalanche conditions for the southern San Juans and Sangre de Cristos. As of Monday, March 18th, avalanche danger is moderate at all elevations in the South San Juans. In the Sangres, it's considerable at and above tree line. According to the Colorado Avalanche Information Center, warming temperatures and ample sunshine will warm the most recent storm snow. Loose avalanche activity is most likely on steep, sunny, and rocky slopes, with a probability of natural and human-triggered avalanches increasing during the day. Most avalanches will remain small, but could be dangerous if pushed into terrain traps like gullies, trees, or cliffs. Avoid steep slopes that show signs of warming in the form of rollerballs, pinwheels, or recent avalanche activity on similar slopes. You could also trigger small avalanches in recently drifted snow on steep slopes. Avalanches in the new snow will test deeper buried weak layers and could step down, triggering a larger slide. Steep northerly and easterly slopes have been the most recent culprits for larger avalanches and avalanches triggered from a shallow area. To dodge this problem, avoid slopes steeper than 35 degrees altogether. Next up, the news. The Supreme Court will be hearing oral arguments about the Rio Grande Compact from the Department of the Interior and the states of Texas, New Mexico, and Colorado on Wednesday, March 20th. This case goes back to 2013. It was a case that until recently was seemingly resolved among the three states, when a special master signed off on an agreement between among the three states. Then the federal government, through the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, stepped in and objected. AlamosaCitizen.com has an explainer that breaks down why this is important. The oral arguments will be live-streamed through the Supreme Court's website. The 14th Annual Valley Seed Exchange is March 30th and 31st, at Joyful Journey Hot Spring Spa in Moffitt. This is a free event with 8 different speakers, a seed swap, local vendors, and more. You can get a lot more information at slvse.org. The San Luis Valley Seed Exchange has been an annual community gathering and seed swap since 2010. The Great Sand Dunes National Park is seeking artists to lead a workshop on October 5th. The chosen artist will lead a public program or workshop in their selected field or medium. Painting, photography, music, dance, sculpture, and writing are all possibilities. Artists are certainly not limited, though, to those mediums. To apply, write a 1-page or less summary of the proposed workshop or program, along with samples of work in the form of digital images or a website link to patrick_myers@nps.gov. Applications must be received by March 31st. The National Park is also seeking public input and feedback on initial proposed ideas for Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve's transportation and transit planning effort. Staff will share the park's transportation improvement concept at public meetings and gather public feedback. Feedback can also be submitted online at parkplanning.nps.gov by searching for the Great Sand Dunes Transportation and Transit Plan. You can also submit feedback in person. Hand-delivered feedback can be taken to the Great Sand Dunes Visitor Center at 11999 State Highway 150, Mosca, Colorado, 81146, with attention to transportation and transit planning. Feedback must be submitted by March 29th. April is We Love Our National Park Month. Visit Alamosa will be hosting a series of events highlighting Alamosa's connection to the dunes. Saturday, April 6th, is a community mural project. Visit Alamosa, along with Bianca Maestas and Katie Doxson, will be painting a mural from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 8591 South River Road. The interactive paint-by-numbers mural is free and open to the public. Refreshments will be provided. After the mural is painted, it will be transferred to the Alamosa Welcome Center and unveiled during a special ceremony on April 27th. And you know, those two, Bianca and Katie, were responsible for the mural that's on the pedestrian bridge there at Cole Park. And Diana and I participated in that. It was a really fun exercise. I would not consider myself artistic at all, but because it's a paint by number, anybody can do it. Yep. Even artistically challenged me could do that. And it really was a lot of fun. And you get to see it take place mm-hmm. and grow before your very eyes. It's really cool. So if you get a chance to participate in that paint by number community mural project, please be sure to do that. 8591 South River Road, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., Saturday, April 6th. That brings us to the end of this episode of the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. Join us next time in April when we start our series on bikes and cyclists. The Outdoor Citizen is supported by SLV Go and produced by Owen Woods. A special thanks to Don Richmond for his song Sea Turtle and to Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on this podcast. Until next time, this is Marty Jones, and we'll see you outdoors.